Ladies and gentlemen, we have a visitor here because she came from Vaughntown last week or the week before.
Last week.
Did you have a good time?
Wonderful.
Did you meet a lot of people?
I did.
All right. Did you find, were any of the Spanish people, the Spanish students, did any of them have serious problems expressing themselves?
I wouldn't say serious, but you could tell that they were frightened. A few. It was very new to them speaking English and trying to understand when an English-speaking person would talk to them. But by day three, certainly by day four, they were much, much better.
Day number three is usually the turning point.
It is, yeah.
And it's a big turning point.
Yeah.
And they suddenly open up and they realize that they can get by. And that's an important psychological change.
Well, there's no Spanish allowed. And I'd have to say that the students really followed that rule. Even when I would pass them if they were by themselves having a coffee, and I would specifically listen, and they were speaking English.
Of course.
Not Spanish.
Yes, they speak English for six straight days, five and a half straight days, and most of them say it. They feel strange speaking Spanish after the program, when they get home, or going back on the bus, or driving back, speaking in Spanish as well. Strange sensation after six straight days of speaking only English. And sometimes we have had Spanish students driving back together, and they speak English in their car. A little bit strange, but they do that. Mm-hmm. So it's a very important psychological. It's a psychological course more than a technical linguistic course.
Mm-hmm.
How many of these have you done?
This is my second one. I did one in November, which was a full Vaughntown with more students and more one-on-one. It was a full day. This was called a 50-50. Where the students, 50% of their time was in classroom, on site, and the other time was with the Anglos.
Okay. Where are you from, Judith?
I'm from New York City, and I'm also from Providence, Rhode Island. I like to say that.
She's from New York City and also from Providence, Rhode Island. You know, it's interesting. Usually, Spanish people, if you ask them where they are from, they will invariably state their birthplace. Even if they were there for only 1 month.
Wow.
For example, my father was a... where are you from? I'm from the Canary Islands. But you don't have an accent from the Canary Islands. Oh, well, my father was a military man, and he was transferred. And 1 month after I was born, we were moved to the Basque Country. And so then I said, okay, so you're not really from the Canary Islands. I said, well, that's where I was born. So you're really, the Spanish way, you're from Providence, Rhode Island.
Well, I am, and I lived there a long time. I was born there, went to school there, married there, had children there, divorced there.
Wow. Then
and left there.
Yeah. The full nine yards. The whole cycle. Todo ciclo.
Yeah.
Providence, Rhode Island. It was by Roger Williams.
Oh, my goodness, you're
right.
Yes.
It's Providencia.
Yes.
Yeah, that's an interesting word.
Mm-hmm.
The pilgrims, well, the Puritans and other very religious people crossed the Atlantic and settled in the northeast of the United States. The adventurers and business people went to Virginia to grow tobacco. But it's an interesting story. We'll come right back with more. Hello, welcome back. All right, we're back together for our last half hour. And I'm accompanied by Judith, and we're going to grill her.
Mm.
It's going to be an intense interrogation. Mm. But before I do so, I want to remind you that this coming Monday, the 9th of May, I will be in Ancora once again for 2 hours of a fast and furious Master English class, which is very good for your listening comprehension and for your vocabulary and many things. I'll be talking about every imaginable subject under the sun. And so you just have to keep up with me. Don't fall behind. You have to keep up. And if you fall behind, you have to catch up. All right. And so I'll take a bottle of ketchup there and keep it out in view so people are going to remember that if you fall behind, you need to catch up. And you say, ketchup. I need to catch up. All right. So if you see a bottle of ketchup sitting on the bar in Ancora and you say, well, I wonder why. ¿Por qué estará? I wonder why. And in Spanish language, very interesting that, Judith, they use the future tense. For wonder. If you say, I wonder why he brought a bottle of ketchup. The way they say in Spanish, why will he have brought?
Mm.
You understand?
Yes.
Why will he have brought a... I love it. I don't think we use that in English, but maybe in certain ways. But in any case, ladies and gentlemen, we're with Judith. And Judith has come twice to Spain to visit us at Vaughntown. And he was here also in the... Well, she grew up in Providence, Rhode Island. Yeah, Providencia, just like the Providencia. All right, I'm from Providence. And you were born there, you were brought up there, you married there, you divorced there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the full circle.
And I left there.
And you left there.
Yeah.
How old were you when left Providence?
I was in my probably late 30s or so.
And where did you
early
go?
Early 40s. I came to Spain.
You came to Spain?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, okay.
For about a year and a half.
Why did you come to Spain?
At the time, and now as well, I was a travel writer, and I was working very closely with the Spanish Tourist Office in New York.
Okay, you were a travel writer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a person who writes books about traveling.
For me, it was articles.
Articles.
I didn't write books.
For magazines, newspapers, or any?
Magazines and mostly newspapers.
All right.
And I started writing about Spain, and it just kept growing and growing and growing.
Well, what got you first interested in Spain?
I had actually, the first interest was I had met a Spaniard. And I'd never really met a Spaniard before. And he kept saying, you really should go see my country. It's beautiful.
So, did he look like Antonio Banderas?
A little bit.
All right. Okay, so, yeah.
Actually, yes.
All right.
Okay.
So, there was a sentimental reason as well.
Yes, there was.
All right.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you came to Spain, and did you write any articles about Spain?
I certainly did. I arrived just at the time the Guernica was returning to Prado, and nobody else was writing about it, so I went back to the States and wrote it, and it was published in many, many newspapers because it was big news, and it just made my, shall we say, legacy a little bit better.
Mi legado.
Yeah.
My legacy a little bit better. So you enlightened the American public on the history of the town of Guernica.
Yes.
The bombing of Guernica.
More on the painting itself in Picasso and why it was away that had returned to Madrid after so many years.
Okay.
That was the slant was not political, it was travel.
Okay. Hmm. Which it should be if it's a travel.
Yes.
But you should enlighten people a little bit of the history behind it.
Yes.
And so how many articles in all do you think you've written about Spain?
Oh, about Spain alone, I would say 50 to 75.
Is there any single article that's your favorite about Spain that you remember with special affection?
I wish I could say yes, but what happens after you write an article, it's done, it's gone, and it's in somebody else's hands, and I've already moved on to the next one.
All right.
Yeah.
It's just like a factory. It's like an assembly line. Next, boom, boom.
Yeah, next. Boom.
Like making churros, as they say. You know churros here?
My favorite.
Have you ever watched how they're made?
No.
Okay.
No.
There are some bars in Spain, not too many now in Madrid, where you can walk in and you can see in the back how they're making them. Most bars buy the churros. The person comes by carrying them from a churro factory or a porra, which is a bigger. But they still make them. Mm. It's not necessarily fascinating, but it's interesting to watch.
It's the first thing I do when I come to Spain is have café con leche and churros.
Yeah. And so it's an expression here in Spain, like churros means again and again. Next, 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 como churros.
Mm.
Like a machine.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've written a lot of articles in Spain.
A lot of articles.
So you must be a semi-expert or an expert on Spain.
Well, I wouldn't put myself in that category, but I do know a lot about it. I've been to many, many small towns that some Spaniards have never gone to.
What's your favorite area of Spain?
I like this area. I love Madrid. I like Salamanca, of course. I don't like the south too much, only because of my skin. If it gets too warm down there, I'm very hot. I've been up in the Basque country, Galicia, which their national instrument is a bagpipe, which I get a kick out of because I'm Irish. Yeah,
I prefer the Scottish style bagpipe. It's deeper in its sound.
Yeah, this one's
it's
smaller.
Shrill. It's more shrill and smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good when it's played well, and you can hear it in the forests of Galicia.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear these bagpipes and things. Have you been to Barcelona much?
Not too much. No, I started in Barcelona, and that's where the first press trip was, and I just wasn't comfortable there. And I remember saying to the tour leader that I was leaving, and they were shocked that I would leave. And I said, well, I'm going to take myself to Madrid. That's how I got the story about the Guernica, and that's how I just got better and better and better.
All right. I'm surprised you weren't comfortable. Barcelona usually is a is an immediate taste. The Madrid is an acquired taste.
Well,
you see, Madrid is more provincial, to tell you the truth. Barcelona is more has been traditionally more cosmopolitan, mm-hmm. more European,
mm-hmm.
and it's on the coast. It has some incredible architecture, absolutely incredible architecture, mm-hmm. and then it's blessed by some interesting topography as well. The mountains just behind it, and then you have the Montjuïc, where you have the fortress
yes.
up above. And so you can go up and look down on Barcelona. It's yes. quite impressive.
Yes, it is.
Quite impressive. In the Olympics in 1992, they took advantage of some of these for photography and for filming, etc. So why are you here? And why are you here with me today?
Well, why am I here with you? Because I wanted to do an article on Vondheim. And the first time I went in November was just for me, and I didn't have any feeling that I wanted to write about it. Didn't take any notes or interview anyone. And when I left, I was so struck by what had happened to me. It was a cultural experience I've never had before. And I put it in my back of my mind that I'd like to do an article. So then I wanted to come back and do the 50-50 in Belmonte, which I just finished. And I thought, well, why not go to the guru here, to the big guy, El Jefe, and see what he has to say about these programs that he created. And they're so successful. And what it does for the people that go there. So I came to
you. You have to force people to use the language. Classroom is, as I told you in our interview, is a flight simulator. You don't fly. Mm. The classroom is the shallow end of the swimming pool. If you don't know how to swim, and I'm your instructor, well, I'm going to put you in the shallow end, and I'm going to teach you the crawl and the breaststroke. And we'll practice the technique back and forth. But you will not lose your fear of the water until I throw you into the deep end. Mm-hmm. And when I do throw you into the deep end, you're probably going to panic. You're going to get some water up your nose, and you'll start thrashing, and you'll start dog paddling. And within 2 minutes, you're staying afloat, but you're still dog paddling. But at least you've broken your fear of the water.
Wonderful description.
So I prefer, in the end, that my Spanish learners develop a cross between crawl, breaststroke, and pure dog paddling. But they have to stay afloat. Mm-hmm. They will never speak English perfectly. Never. But they can be perfectly effective in real communication situations with imperfect English. But they have to understand. That's the problem. And listening comprehension cannot be achieved in the classroom. Because we teachers speak often too slowly or too clearly in the classroom because we're articulating around a certain grammatical point, whatever. So it's not real. The Vondheim is a listening comprehension whirlwind. It's a listening comprehension tsunami. You know, they just, like a flash flood, it carries you down. And so you the only thing you can do is dog paddle. You cannot do your beautiful breaststroke or all this technique you've learned in the shallow end. Later, you can go back. Once you've broken your fear of the water in the deep end, which only takes 2 or 3 minutes, I will tell you, okay, Judith, out, let's go back. And probably say, no, I think I'm okay now. I said, no, Judith, go back. And then, with a new mindset of having lost your fear of the water, you'll improve your technique on the breaststroke and on the crawl.
Well, the Anglo as well, the experience is just as exhilarating because we don't really think
just
about
what?
Exhilarating.
Ladies and gentlemen, she said exhilarating. I taught that word a few minutes before you came.
Oh, well, I'm glad I'm using it because we're not aware of our language, English, when we're speaking today. And when standing in front of a Spaniard, we have to be clear, careful. And we're dog paddling, too, that they understand us, especially when you see the fear in their eyes. So the experience is a 50-50.
It's interesting. So you say fear. Mm-hmm. It's a fear of the unknown. It's mm-hmm. it's quite strong in this country. Mm-hmm. Fear of the unknown. Fear of what they call the sense of the ridiculous, which we would probably say to make a fool of yourself.
Exactly.
In a situation that you are uncomfortable, you're on, it's like the first day you go out to ice skate in your life. And you can barely stay. You know, you can barely stay on your feet. And so you feel incredibly vulnerable. And if you're in the hands of an expert ice skating teacher, okay, well, he'll take you and help you around a couple of times, et cetera, et cetera. And it doesn't matter if you're a normal person or Barack Obama or David Cameron, they are in the hands of the instructor. And so these people are invulnerable. They feel very vulnerable.
Well, one of the things that I found that I was doing after day two, after you've talked to the same person two or three times, you start to open up about yourself. So you're telling a little bit of your secrets. It's almost like, oh, well, I'll never see this person again. And then you get their interest, and they're not thinking about speaking English, and they're telling you something about their life. So a friendship is developing as well. So that feeling of, oh, I'm afraid or making a fool of myself begins to dissipate.
Yes. There's a lot of bonding.
Yeah, there is. A lot.
Bonding is coming together, vínculos emocionales entre las personas, because it's a strange microcosm.
Very.
Of human interaction that you can't find, I think, anywhere.
Nowhere.
It's because of the diverging objectives of the different peoples who come there. It creates a transcendent product that I didn't really, a little bit, I foresaw it, but I didn't foresee when I created the product back in 2001. I didn't foresee the total outcome, the total picture or reality that comes out of the Vaughan Towns. Culturally and socially, it is a greater experience than linguistically for the Spaniards.
I've taken a lot of time in my life to describe things, particularly in writing, and I'm having a difficult time describing the experience at Vaughan Town. I use the word cult, but sometimes the word cult has a bad meaning. But you do become this group of the body of people moving from space to space within these beautiful locations that you put us. We go on for walks. We come back. We do skits together. We make fools out of ourselves, right? And that helps the bonding. You have dinner and lunch with these people, a couple of hours there. Not these people, excuse me, but the Spaniards with the English and vice versa. So it's I'm going to do my best to describe it.
All right. It's not easy to describe.
No.
And for us, it's very, very difficult to sell because for two reasons. People are afraid to go.
Yeah.
And second, it's difficult to explain the atmosphere so that they can understand it, you see. And so it can be frustrating for us, quite frustrating. Welcome back. All right. We still have a few minutes. I'm here with Judith. What's your last name, Judith? I don't know.
Glynn.
Glynn. With one N or two?
Two.
Glynn.
G-L-Y.
Like John Glynn.
No. G-L-Y-N-N.
Ah. Pronunciation's identical. Well.
Yes.
For Texan, it's
close.
Identical.
It's very close.
In Texas, to say alfiler, a pin, a pin cushion, pin, and pen to write with, it's exactly the same pronunciation in Texas. Right. Yeah, there's a pin in my pen. whereas in Rhode Island or New York, says there's a pin in my pen, probably.
That's right.
All right. Yeah. So we're with Judith Glynn, and she's a travel writer, and she grew up in Rhode Island, the smallest state and area in the United States, in the capital city of Providence, which traditionally, well, historically was a very religious community. Mm. And then after X number of years and marriage, divorce, and children, everything. She moved to New York City, but first she came to Spain for a year and a half. And she has written up to 50 or 60 or 70.
At least, I haven't counted, but at
articles,
least.
Articles, yeah. Travel articles about Spain. Mm-hmm. And during the break, she asked me, what would you do if you retired? Where would you live or something like that?
Where will you retire?
I would live for 2 to 3 months in different places throughout the year. I would find what they call here apart hotels, which means I would find little suites with kitchenettes and things. And I would live for 2 months in Rhode Island.
You would?
Why not?
And I'll show you around. Absolutely.
And then I'd move for 2 months down to Coral Gables, Florida.
All right. Never been there?
Well, it's part of Miami.
That's right.
In south of Miami. It's where the famous, I can't remember the name of the hotel. And then I would come back and go to the coast, Spanish coast, and spend 2 months there. Then as the winter sets in, maybe I'd go down to south of Buenos Aires.
Nice.
You know, and go down to Argentina or to Chile. Mm-hmm. And then I'd go 2 months, maybe 2 to 3 months. Maybe I'd go up to Denmark or spend a month in the fjords.
Nice.
Along, you know, so I would live, because I can afford it.
Yes.
I would live for periods of 2 to 3 months, living in these places and enjoying them.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I had good health.
Well, we're going to assume that's going to happen if you've lived a pretty good lifestyle and you look terrific, so I wouldn't worry about that.
I've treat my body like I treat my cars.
Yeah.
I mistreat them. I eat all the things you shouldn't eat.
I know.
During the years when they said you should eat only one egg per week, I was eating daily eggs.
Yep.
I just pay no attention.
I don't pay attention. Not too much. Yeah.
And now, sure enough, now we recommend you eat eggs. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I drink coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot, not a lot, but I drink coffee quite a bit every day. And then for 20 or 25 years, coffee, it's bad for your stress levels. It's bad for your blood pressure. It's bad for this. And I just continue drinking coffee, and now they say it's good for you.
Mm-hmm. Red wine, too. They say that's good for
you. And red wine as well.
Yeah.
I do everything that they used to say you should not do,
right. But
I gutted it out, you know. And sure enough, nutritional science and dietary science is a very inexact science.
Well, you look healthy. Sitting across from me, you look just fine.
Well, when you enjoy life,
it affects
your health, physical health.
Come to Rhode Island and put you in a little apartment somewhere, and you can enjoy yourself. Go down to Newport if you like that type of life. If you like water and boats and sailing. If you like lobster, or as they say, lobster.
Lobster.
All right. Yeah. Very colonial there. Beautiful, old homes. Brown
what
University.
What I do is I rent a car and just drive around. I'll drive all the way up to Maine. I'll drive to New Hampshire, to Vermont, to the Hudson Valley.
Yes.
Over to Cape Cod. I'll go out, Boston proper itself.
Yes. Yeah.
And I have a friend in Cambridge.
Oh, then
a good friend.
You're just fine.
Millionaire, by the way.
The one nice thing about New England is you can drive to different states in a short time. Actually, poor little Rhode Island, it's just 1 hour to drive north and south and 1 hour east and west. So in half a day, you could see it. Then take yourself up to Vermont.
Yeah.
The Green Mountains.
What's your favorite area of New England?
I stay close to home. Because I live a lot of time in New York, I don't do much traveling. I don't go to Boston that much. I've been up there, and I can tell if I like a place if I just feel comfortable.
Don't feel comfortable in Boston?
Not really, no.
Because of the people or the architecture of the place?
It's very difficult to describe this. It's just a comfort level. And it's very similar to Providence as well. They look alike.
You have a high sensitivity to this because you said you didn't like Barcelona the first time you were there.
No.
And there's something, you have a sixth sense that perceives something unpleasant.
Yes, I do.
And you can't put your finger exactly on it, but it's a feeling.
And I avoid it.
Okay. And in this company, we have 4,000 square meters here.
Yeah.
What's the feeling?
Oh, it's good. The vibe is very good. Why do you think I'm sitting here?
Vibes, ladies and gentlemen, means vibrations. We say vibes. It's so common to say the vibrations. We say vibes.
Yeah.
The vibes are good. The vibes are positive. The vibes are encouraging, etc. And things like that. So what are your plans now after this? After how much longer are you going to stay in Spain?
I'm here until Sunday.
I've been
here almost 17 days in Madrid, in Spain. I'll return to New York. There's always things to do there, family things, children graduating and all that. And then I would say I'm not going to come back because I've been probably 40 times.
All right.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And where do you live in New York City? In Manhattan?
I live in Manhattan. I live in a neighborhood called Hell's Kitchen.
Hell's Kitchen.
Hell's Kitchen. They want to call it the West 50s. But
La Cocina del Infierno. That's interesting.
Right.
Hell's Kitchen.
Hell's Kitchen.
Let's find Hell's Kitchen on the map, by the way. Okay, but
they want to call it the West 50s because now it's very trendy. When I first moved in there, you wouldn't walk over to 9th Avenue. I've been in the same apartment for about 25 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you buy it or is it rented?
I bought it. It's worth a lot of money now compared to when I bought it. Yeah.
Okay, so Hell's Kitchen is just before. Well, it's on the Hudson. Is it near the UN building?
No, it's on the west side.
I'm sorry, the UN building's on the East River.
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
West
the opposite.
Side.
Did you see the plane landing on the Hudson?
I saw it on TV. No, I don't see all the right. I don't see the ocean from the river from where I am. No. But it's a very close walk. I'm on 56th Street, so
you're close to Times Square.
Yeah, I walk down there. You can walk to Lincoln Center, walk to Carnegie Hall.
We see. I'm going to be in New York for a few days. This probably early September, the first days of September.
Okay.
And I was thinking of buying pre-purchasing tickets for Hamilton. Do you recommend it? Have you been?
I have not been because you can't get tickets, but I'm sure you could find a way.
But tickets for September, you can't?
Everybody knows somebody, and I do know somebody who gets good tickets. So keep my email address.
All right.
I'll try to help you.
So I'll try to exploit you
to
get tickets.
Yeah, try. Why not? Why not?
Yeah, human exploitation. That's what we do in Vaughntown,
sure.
By the way. And so, so it's booked it's sold out for over a year.
Long time. But they have house seats. You know, they have seats that they let go maybe 2 or 3 days before.
All
and
right.
The longer you're in New York, you go down another level. So you know people who do things, and maybe somebody knows somebody who sells those house seats, and you just pay the regular price. This is not a promise. This is, I'll help you if I can.
What's the usual price for a seat?
Oh, my goodness, they can go up to, a normal price is about $150.
$150.
How about that? Yeah, $125 in there. But for Hamilton, I don't even know. Probably $5.
If it's too expensive, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a price level that I won't accept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if I were a billionaire, certain things that, just not right.
Are you a theater person? Do you like to do that when you go to New York? Or do you like to walk?
Yes, I do, but I'm not a theater person.
Mm-hmm.
The best play I've seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
With a big difference over number two, was the senior class play in my high school.
Oh, that's...
When I was a sophomore.
Huh.
And I swear, nothing has come close. And it was a play that was taken out of a novel by Thomas Wolfe called Look Homeward, Angel. Look Homeward, Angel. Interesting story. I later read the book. The play was outstanding. Of course, I was 16. I was more impressionable,
of
perhaps.
Course. Yeah.
But nevertheless, I have seen... When I go to Broadway or to go to the West End now in London, I usually go to shows of sorts. I usually go to musicals. You know, The Cats or Phantom of the Opera, Sleeping Beauty or these things. Because I'm usually with a person who doesn't speak English well who doesn't have enough command of English to understand the nuances. Mm-hmm. And so the language you use in a drama or a comedy, well done on Broadway or in London, it requires having close to a native ability to understand.
Correct.
Otherwise, you're missing some of the richness.
Correct.
So it's better to see a show.
Yeah. The music. The singing and the dancing is such top rate.
Well, you see, you go to Broadway. I mean, the competition to reach Broadway is so intense that when you go to a show... I mean, you're seeing the best that America can create.
Yes.
I mean, and that's 320 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best they can create. We have Richard Brown coming in, by the way. Mm. He always barges in on me.
All right.
You
say
to barge in and he's very British.
British, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So you get a flow of visitors here from time to time.
Yeah, and the next guy coming in is a spy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I see somebody walking
No, he's not a spy. He's an operative for the United Nations.
Uh-huh.
But in any case, it's quite interesting. We have to go. It's been a real pleasure.
I've enjoyed it very, very much. And please come to Rhode Island and New York.
I will.
Help you out.
Nacho, take it away.